I can't solve COVID. I can throw myself down a flight of stairs and hope that it lets someone forget their troubles.
Welcome to Ladies First with Laura Brown. I'm Laura Brown, editor-in-chief of InStyle magazine, and each week I'm talking to a legendary lady about what she does, how she does it, and what we can learn from her. Melissa McCarthy is one of the world's greatest and most innately talented performers. And it goes without saying she's funny as beep. I'm also thrilled to say she's on this month's cover.
You're on Ladies First podcast. You know why? You know why?
Is it because ladies are first?
Because ladies are first. And because you are first in what you do.
Oh.
And it is your absolute freakishly innate ability. And what I think about with you, along with so many other lovely, glorious things, is ability. And how you are able to somehow physically, mentally, and everything digest a performance in a character that looks like it just came out of you by magic.
Well, that's nice.
How was your 50th? Did you have a good one?
It was great. I was with an amazing group of people. And it was lovely because I was like, I'm here, I'm with people, I'm working, I'm in a safe place. So it was great. It was quiet, but lovely. I was so happy to have the whole family here that I was like, quiet is just fine. I'll take it. When I actually hear what's coming out of my mouth, it is like a sedative. I'm like a talking human sedative. It's so boring. Like I should be telling like, oh boy, I got a zinger here. Instead, I'm like, then we cooked dinner and then we watched a show. I mean, holy God, I'm nodding off.
How did you feel when the New York Times named you one of the 25 greatest performers of the 21st century, Melissa McCarthy?
I truthfully felt like my dad somehow was allowed to make the list. I was like, Mike McCarthy made a list and lost his mind and put me on it. I mean, I still am always like, God, I hope I get another job at some point. So to see that list and be on it, I couldn't process it beyond they got to 19 and they're like, you know, let's call Mike McCarthy and see if he wants to throw somebody's name into a hat. And he's like, what about my daughter, Missy? Like, that's how it hit me. I was quite shocked by it, for sure.
Well, actually, your dad put your name on it, Sonia Braga.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
He's a big Sonia Braga fan.
He really is. She was first, and I was like his third choice.
Obviously, it's weird, but what does that mean? Seeing outside, how people see you from outside.
I love what I do, but I don't think of myself in that way at all. 15 years ago, if you would have said, like, oh, by the way, you and Ben are going to be able to write and make movies and like the dumb stories that we used to do, you know, on the stage at Groundlings Improv Theater in LA. It's like, you're now going to be able to do that same thing, but for like feature films. We would have been like, really? Like, is that possible? I still slightly feel like we're putting on shows, you know, like we're scrappy. And just the way we do things still kind of feels very grassroots. I think of us as circus people that we just kind of travel around and we're putting on a show, but I don't think about it as like I would ever be put into that category. And I don't mean that in a dismissive way. I just, it's like getting an invite to a party where you're like, oh, I didn't know they knew I existed. If I start to think about that stuff, I think you go slightly daffy.
It's a strange one. I always think any of my active friends is sort of this inside and outside of yourself. One, you're inside yourself as a person and outside yourself in a role.
Yes. I always find it quite interesting when people say, you know, oh, well, of course you have a public life. Why do people seem surprised you're an actor? But then when you think about it, at least how I perceive it, and I think I'm sure I'm not alone, I've chosen to be an actor. I'm quite happy with myself, but I wouldn't know how to play myself. I'd be like, I don't know. Like, my chosen profession is to completely remove myself and to step into the shoes of someone else. So it is the opposite of like, well, if you want to be an actor, you want to be known. And it's like, no, no, no. That's something that's been put on us. And I don't mind people saying hello. It's not that I'm like, oh, I hate that side of it. But it's a funny thing of, I went into acting because I find other people more interesting and I love delving out of myself and into someone else. So then when the light gets shown on myself as opposed to a character, it feels like it's off topic or something.
Right, right. Speaking to your point, this is inside and outside of yourself. This is you going to a very reverent ritual, Hollywood ritual. You and Ben showed up in this. Can you just give me a quick feeling about, explain this to me, this joyful moment?
I'm sure it threw everybody into a tizzy because I think it was late afternoon, the day before the Oscars. And I was like, are people still changing for the party? Do we do that? And I went, can we wear matching tracksuits? And someone was like, for tomorrow? And all of a sudden I was like, I need to be in like tennies and like tracksuits. I'm like, it just seems so funny to me and so comfortable. We walked into the after party and I have never been flipped off or told to fuck off as much as in that party. And it was all done jokingly, but also with some real thing behind it. Cause everyone's like, I put on a different dress and different heels. Fuck you for being in that tracksuit. And I was like, I've never been more comfortable. I'm thriving right now. And literally, I just walked in. Some people I knew, some people I didn't know. And they just totally were like, you go fuck yourself right now. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go dance pretty hard right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can't stand up because your feet hurt?
And I think I was like, I don't know that next time I won't wear the tracksuit to the awards. Not that I'm saying I'll ever go again, but if I ever... Yeah, I'm lucky enough to partake in it.
I think it's incumbent upon you to, as one of the 21st century's great top 25 performers, it's incumbent, and the New York Times expects it.
Then it shall be so.
So let's go back a bit. I just want to talk about the last year-ish, your sort of COVID experience, because you, obviously, this all happened to us in March. You left for Australia July-ish, right?
Yes, I was in London rehearsing for Little Mermaid right when it was still in that moment where I was with the lovely John and Rob Marshall that are the amazing team that's doing Little Mermaid. And I remember we were still talking like, is this thing going to be a thing? That was the conversation of like, boy, something's going on. Do you think it's really going to go anywhere else? This was like a Tuesday where we were still having that kind of conversation. I came into work Wednesday morning and went right to the office. And I was like, we need a flight home today and we have to get home or I'm not going to get home. I flew out that night and it was like the next day that they started just shutting everything down. I keep thinking about like if someone said a year ago that this would all be happening, we'd be like, hey, you seem kind of crazy. Like, truly, if it was like, no, it'll affect the world and it will will never be the same again. I mean, I think you just would have been like, that can't happen. It's 2020.
Yeah, and be like, oh, do you think you should talk to someone?
You'd be like rallying a group of friends to be like, so Diane's gone batshit.
How were you guys your family in the first few months of it? How were you with it? How were you with being at home and all that?
My dad had gone home a little early and my mom was waiting for me to get home from London. So she got stuck there with us and she couldn't get home and she stayed like 5 months with us, which was, I have to say, amazing.
Yeah.
Because I haven't lived with my mom every day since I was 18 years old. So to have that time with her again was unbelievable. I think we were all just upside down. It was the panic of how close, what do you have to wash? We had washing stations in our garage and we would leave things and, you know, we were like in hazmat suits. I just remember scrubbing the outside of grapefruits, like when it started, with soap and water and then into like a vinegar bath because I was like, we didn't know what was safe enough. So the amount of scrubbing and cleaning was so crazy. And Ben's like, are you Cloroxing the outsides of the apple? Like, should we be eating it?
How did it feel when you were then getting ready to pick up and leave to sort of land in Australia with all of this going on?
We were supposed to shoot 9 Perfect Strangers in LA. And obviously that wasn't going to happen. And they called one day and said, between like cleaning grapefruits and laundry and everything else you were doing, and trying to teach my fifth grader, you know, algebra, which I was like, It's been a minute. Which that was a real, I mean, I kind of weirdly loved it, but also it's like, oh God, I just didn't retain what I thought I had.
Oh, it's gone.
I got a call and they said, would you think about going to Australia to Byron Bay to shoot this? My mom's there and like the kids are in different rooms on laptop, blah, 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 the dogs are like, I didn't. And I just went, are you crazy? I can't pick up a family during a pandemic. I can't go down the street to a store. How do we possibly pack? And I said, there's no possible way. That seems crazy. And then Vivian, my 13-year-old, came out so glazed over from sitting on a Zoom class for lunch. And I'd made her lunch. And I usually don't even bring up kind of work stuff with her. But for some reason, we were outside. And I was like, I have the weirdest call. Somebody called and said, like, do we want to move to Australia to do Nine Perfect Strangers? And she didn't even take a beat. I don't even know that she looked up at me because she was so like in a zone from all that Zoom class. And she went, we should leave today. We should leave today. And I was like, what? And she goes, we can't see friends. Is Australia not one of the safest places on the planet? We can't do anything here except sit in a room and like watch people. She goes, we should get on a plane and leave today. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. And I walked into Ben and I said, Vivi says we should leave today. What are we doing here? And he was like, oh my God. So we called everybody back and I was like, yes, yes, we'll go to, yes. And that's how we ended up, and I have to say landing, like the Sydney airport was empty except for military was there. It's really impressive that they're not messing around here, which is why it's handled so safely. It's like for the good of all, everybody is restricted. And guess what, guys? It works.
It works. Just works. And that's why you are now in your, hang on, 6th, 7th month?
Yeah.
There? You live there now.
Totally. I was like, I'm going to Woolies. And someone's like, oh, you say Woolies for Woolworths. I was like, I mean, Ben says, how you going now? I'm here for 6, 7 more months. We love it.
It's that long?
Yeah. We're staying at least until August. Ben wrote a show, God's Favorite Idiot, for Netflix, and we're going to shoot it here.
What has it meant? And how has it transformed or affected the way you think about your own mobility?
It's just now like everything's possible and right. Everything can feel like home. Like I am so connected to Australia in a way that I didn't anticipate, in a way that I could very easily live here for the rest of my life. And I'm in love with it. I'm in love with the people. Everyone is so chatty. For like a Midwestern gal yeah. that lives in LA where no one wants to talk to you or pretend, 5 people standing in line, everyone's trying to pretend they don't see the other person. And I'm the weird girl from Illinois that's like, boy, today's hot, huh? And they're just like, I'm trying to not talk to anyone. And here it's like, in the grocery store, I can't go down a single aisle with somebody just not like, here we are. Now we're talking about soup. I don't know why, but it's wonderful. Like anything that's on someone's mind, I come home and I'm like, I had 15 conversations at the grocery store.
Are you recognized often or do you can sort of go about? I'm always curious when you pick up and land somewhere else, you know?
I'd say, 60-40. I think a lot of times I'm recognized, but I think here there's a funny thing of, I think I'm recognized, but that has nothing to do with why they're talking to me. We're both buying grapes and they're like, what do you think of these things? I'm like, okay. And then there's other times that someone was like, are you American? Are you working here? And I was like, oh, I am, it's beautiful, blah, blah, blah. I feel so lucky. And she's like, good for you. Good for you. And she goes, now, do you find that, can you only do that kind of work or do you keep a couple of other jobs? And I was like, you know what? Recently, I can just do that. And she goes, oh, so you're talking on some of this. So do you get lines? And I said, I do. I get a couple of lines. I was like, it's a perfectly reasonable question. And then I think the next time I came in to shed this beautiful little store, I think the jig had been up, like wardrobe had been in, they'd shopped there. And I walked in, she goes, oh, Okay, I didn't know. I'm sorry. I was like, don't apologize. I don't apologize at all. I was like, why would you know who the hell I am?
My people, for the win. What's that? Has it been for a family, for a parent being there?
Going from complete isolation, fear of being sick, fear of just your own country turning on itself. I've said this whole time. I said, I know COVID-19 is the virus, but the real virus that scares me is the violence and the hatred. If anything's really going to extinguish us as a species, it's that. You know, we follow all of these rules for the good of the majority. We stop at red lights. We pull over for ambulances. You can't start a bonfire in your living room in an apartment building. As much as I've tried. And I've paid all the fines. But it's like all we do a million things a day. So I don't know why this has become the turning point. And you know, it has nothing to do with this 3x5 piece of cloth that on our face. If somebody said, hey, oh my God, we can cure cancer. All you have to do is wear this head wrap and you can, people would be like, oh my God, that's amazing. Like we would do anything for that. And saying like, we have a way to make, you know, what is it? 97% chance go away. If you just wear this little 3x5 piece of fabric until we figure it out, and how that's become an infringement on someone's rights and political and all of that stuff. I just think, you know, maybe I live in the world in my head, but I was like, I think the scariest thing about all of this, more so than even COVID, is that I really truly didn't think people hated each other that much, or hated people that they don't even know, or hate
the idea of
just
them.
Hate the idea of people that they don't even know. I think the next 10 years of our lives have to be spent on figuring out why people are so angry, and also checking on the mental illness. I mean, the whole QAnon thing, it's like, if you would have said that it's like pizzas are eating babies and then they're going to Mars and coming back. And it's, you know, I mean, it might as well be that it's so far.
Yeah. And there's lasers involved. There's always lasers.
And I want to get mad, and I do get mad, and you get incredulous about how insane it is. And at the same time, I always say, but who's going to help people if you've lost any sense of reality? We can't just get mad. We have to help people get mentally healthy again. But at the same time, it pisses you off. We've got quite a mess ahead of us because people need help. They're not just wrong. They need help.
And because there's such hideous things are happening, it pushes your limits of empathy and understanding. Of course it does. But how did you feel watching the inauguration and seeing some semblance of civility?
So I was, of course, you know, watching it in Australia. I had missed part of it because it had happened while we were sleeping. And I just got up and I was very nervous to go online or turn on any coverage. I went to, I think, CNN or something because I was afraid of what possibly could have happened. And then just to see that it was there, people were doing it safely. There was kindness. It was the first time that I felt like I could be proud, like at least on the cusp of being proud again to be an American. And just seeing how people treated each other and see people talking. I kept thinking that the First Lady, Jill, just every time somebody passed, she's chatting and laughing. And I was like, it's just common decency and humanity that people are chatting and truly like connecting with each other. And it, I mean, we watched it with the kids. I cried at everything. I cried at J-Lo. I cried at Gaga. Like everybody made me cry because I was like, it just all felt so important. I can't tell you how many Aussies I talked to that the day of the inauguration, they're like, oh God, you know, it's such a relief. Like everybody felt this sense of like, maybe it's going to be okay. Because it wasn't, when something crumbles, especially democracy just being crumbling, I think everybody did really feel like, what's to say it's not us next? Like, can you right the ship? And Australians were as nervous and as emotional as we were.
It's a trauma. Yeah, it's a trauma for everybody on very different levels. I don't think people were necessarily dancing in the streets on Inauguration Day because it was just a bit like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think.
You know, softly.
Yeah, I think it's going to take years to get back and to be like, is it okay to speak up? I don't think I ever thought as an ordinary person that you would fear retaliation from your day-to-day activities or simply just believing what you believe in. And even when it's pretty fair in the middle, like I'm not an extreme person. And I think me just saying like, can't we all just be kind to each other? Like when that gets to like, fuck you, lady, you have to be like, well, I don't know what to do.
How does it affect, because I think, you know, we've talked about this before, like as a performer, the glory and joy and value of pure entertainment, you know what I mean, for people. How has it seeped into your mind as a performer in what you're choosing to do and what you want to reflect through what you do?
The world's tough on comedy right now. And not to be like, critics don't like us, but critics are so hard on it. And it's okay. You don't have to like what I do, or you don't have to like comedy. But I always think as a reviewer or these, you know, there's so many critics now that I'm like, did you study film or acting or anything? But it's like being a food critic and I only like incredibly spicy food.
Right.
It's like, well, it's like loving spicy food, does that make you a food critic? You have to be able to eat things even you don't like and go, it's not my favorite thing, but boy, they really did it well or whatever. But in this particular moment in the world, I just think to bash comedies, I'm like, listen, I watch a lot of murder. I love murder documentaries. I go down terrible wormholes. But I also think you need to be able to make fun of yourself. You need to be able to laugh at something. And not just meaning what I make or Ben and I make, but you know, in terms of what I want to try to put out into the world, Ben and I talk about it a lot, that it's like, will this make somebody happy? Will this make somebody at the end of a 18-hour shift in the OR, can they just check out and laugh for, you know, an hour? I can't solve COVID. I can't make things better. I can't make all these angry people better. It's the one thing we can try to do, and we try to do it our best. And like, maybe I can just help someone get the stupidest giggle or just forget their troubles for if it's a half hour, whatever it is. I take that kind of as like, that's my job to do. I can throw myself down a flight of stairs and hope that it lets someone forget their troubles.
Welcome back to Ladies First with me, Laura Brown, and Melissa McCarthy, God's gift to humor.
You are really good at throwing yourself around. Are you still as keen to throw yourself around as you were? Or are you like, maybe I should, you know, watch my elbow?
I'm a little more hesitant than I ever was. My initial thought to anything is like, ooh, I'll do it. And they're like, just walk through it. Don't actually fall down. I'll be like, absolutely. And then when I do the rehearsal, I will always throw myself down. And everybody goes, we just talked about this. I'm like, I know, but I just wanted to figure something out. I am better at it because about 10 years ago, a stunt woman said, you're going to regret this. You are going to feel like a stunt woman, an older stunt woman at some point, and you will regret it. And I was like, no, I love it. And now I'm like, ooh, I've hurt myself enough places where I have to spend all week kind of being like, I mean, I never thought I'd be like, I really have to work on my hips.
When you guys sometimes do your Instagram with the beer.
Yes.
And it's either Ben on his own beer or you come in the back with the beer.
Yes.
Or you're somehow heard with a beer or we just feel you with a beer.
Yes. Feel confident. I'm always close by with a beer, beer o'clock.
When did you realize that beer o'clock was your Instagram currency?
Yeah, Ben started that. I didn't even know he was doing it. He was doing it for a while, and all of a sudden, he just does weird stuff and will never mention it. Like, he'll write a whole script and be like, can you read this? And I think he's giving me a paragraph, and he's like, I wrote a book. I'm like, what? But he was doing all these weird beer o'clocks, and I was like, why are you doing this? And he's like, because I'm bored out of my mind. And then we both started doing it. As COVID and the quarantine kept going, we realized it kept getting progressively earlier.
I remember one was, had it even struck 12 or was about to strike 12 or there
sure.
was a pan to like 11:45 or something. I support you. Okay, wait. Like one of the last times I saw you, we had dinner.
Yes.
And you had come from a costume body scan thing for one Thunder Force. Oh, I remember you loved that.
I mean, anytime you can stand in a nude Capizio and have people scan your body, that's when you know you're living. And it's like, hi, nice to meet you, Carl. Yes, this is actually me in a, it's not see-through, but it's not opaque. It has to be nude. Can I wear like a darker color one? And they're like, no, that's good. And you just stand there like this. Iron Horse makes all of these unbelievable. They make all the big, crazy superhero outfits. And they really are. It's completely different construction. It's different fabrics. It's so complicated and amazing. So I'm in there and there's a huge machine you walk into, and because they do it all the time, and it takes like 15 seconds. And it's like, we have 3,500 pictures of your body. We can now rebuild you. And I always say I'm technology poison. And I heard somebody go, oh my God. Oh my God, what's happening? And I heard all this like hubba, 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 hubba. And everybody's running around this machine. They're like, this has never happened. We've had it for 8 years. The machine just broke down. And people that are with me, that know me, are like, what did you do? What did you do? And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And instead of doing this thing for 15 seconds, it's like, we're going to do it old school. And it was people that just had to keep taking pictures of every square inch of my body. And so that took about 45 minutes. So instead of being like, okay, rip the Band-Aid off, take the pictures, I'm out of here in 15 seconds. They're like, this is going to take almost an hour. And I'm like, with me just standing in a nude Capizio, they're like, yeah. I'm like, all right. Okay, cool. Cool, cool, cool.
New York Times, 25 top performers of the 21st century.
But have you seen your Capizio work? What? Maybe I can get a Capizio campaign.
Plant that seed.
Oh, I'm dropping it right now.
What was it like? Again, you and Octavia have known each other for so 20-something years.
27 years.
And what was it like to be able to do this together, to be like, all right, we're going to be superheroes? And how much have you both changed as performers and everything over that time?
I mean, yeah, we've known each other for, oh my God, a quarter of a century maybe. Ooh, I've never said that. That's awful. That won't be repeated ever. I mean, yes, yeah, she's one of the most incredibly gifted actresses on the planet. It's a given. People know that. I think people don't know. She's also one of the most brilliant. She just always knows like the most thoughtful right thing to say. And it's right from her heart. It's not like, ooh, she can really write a turn of phrase. She speaks right from her soft, chewy heart. And she's also the funniest person on earth. And everybody loved her, even though I know her so well. Getting to act with Octavia is just when you get to be with somebody who is that skilled and effortless at it, it's like, it's a real gift.
And it's lucky for the crew that she was there, because you're a famous asshole.
It's really true. I'm a monster.
My key question on Thunder Force is, if you were, Eminem, if you were to assemble your own Thunder Force in 2021, who would be on it?
Fauci, Michelle Obama. Who else? I'm trying to think of super smart, like Bill Gates, but then also I'm like, James Corden's fun. Somebody's got to keep it light. Kristen Wiig, she'll make the world better. I think that list would keep going for like my children, my family, all the people I'm going to be murdered if I don't say.
But hey, it's 10 years since Bridesmaids.
Oh my God. Holy cow.
Exactly. How do you feel to hear this?
Oh my God. I don't think I realized that. I have to say that was one of the most incredibly joyful. There's people laughing and crying full out in almost every scene. I think everybody felt so free and there wasn't a lot of pressure. Annie and Kristen were just like, do whatever. Like, they're so open to everything that it just allowed everyone to kind of do their best work. And the fit was just like, it was just perfect. Like, how everybody fit into their little puzzle piece. But
it's really just, it's aged like a fine wine. Have you watched it lately? Have you happened upon it at any time?
I haven't watched
recently?
It. Not recently.
You should give it a go. It's good. Okay, we do this thing. It's called 10 Firsts. What was your first ever acting gig?
First ever acting gig was in high school. I can't remember the play, but I played a cheerleader and I was a cheerleader and I found that incredibly boring. And I was like, I wish I could have been the old woman.
Why didn't you want to be a cheerleader? It's every girl's dream.
No, then I went super gothic the next year and just went to dance clubs downtown Chicago with like a mohawk. So things changed.
You evolved.
Yes.
What was your first stand-up gig?
Stand-up New York, New York City, 20 years old. Absolutely no preparation.
Zero. So do you remember anything, what you led with?
I did long stories. I didn't really do jokes. And I also just improvised it all. I didn't know I was supposed to write stuff because I was 20 and an idiot. I remember it starting strangely because I kept talking about having so much money in Manhattan and being so beautiful, kind of the burden of being so rich, so incredibly wealthy in Manhattan. And that comes with a burden. And people were just like, who the fuck is this 20-year-old dingbat? And then I was like, walking in and being the height I am, I'm immediately noticed when you are always the tallest person in the room. And then they were like, oh, she's bullshit. She's saying everything she's not, but delusionally, as if I really thought I was so pretty. It was like all nonsense. But I remember the feeling of having people be like, get her off stage. And then I was like, oh, I'll let them know now before they really hate me that I'm just bullshitting. And the feeling, the relief that I felt, and like, and when people actually laughed at that, I was like, I just literally thought, oh my God, if I can somehow con the world to make this a job and to make people, you know, at least try to laugh, I've, you know, that's it. There was no going back. At that first night, I was like, oh, I'm cooked. Like, that's it.
Okay, first big break.
You know what? Go is the first movie that I was in that the amazing Jennifer Coolidge, I didn't know her. She didn't really know me. She was in the company. She was always working. I couldn't figure out how to get an agent. And she called the casting director for Go and said, you should see Melissa McCarthy. And then they called just my house because I didn't have an agent. And I went in and I got that part. And that was my first movie. Coolidge didn't know me. She just did something completely kind for somebody else. And she always goes, every time that gets brought up, she goes, oh, I didn't do anything. I didn't even do. I'm like, no, I never would have gotten that audition. I there's no possible way for me to get to it.
Oh, just what a legend. Okay. First SNL skit you were in.
I think the first one was with Kristen with her tiny hands, and we were doing a singing number, and they had put giant prosthetic like muscle arms on me. And I just remember I was trying to so hard not to laugh, and I couldn't believe I was with Kristen. I was at SNL, and literally I was just like, if I wake up in a coma, I'm going to be like, it's okay. I had the best time while I was out.
Against all odds. Okay. First time you felt like a successful actor.
When I lived in New York in my 20s, I lived with Brian Atwood, and we were one building over on the third floor walk up from Joe Allen's, which is a restaurant that, you know, everybody after the theater goes there. And I never went inside because I was like, I'm not an actor. I can't go inside Joe Allen's and tell him I'm an actor. I can't do it. Like, it's not for me yet. And it was so silly. We lived there like at least a year. And it wasn't until years later, I was like, I'm ready. I'm going to go to Joe Allen's. I'm like, and then I remember getting there and like, there's my old apartment. There was where the pimp, who also was a heroin dealer, lived right below us. And then I do remember when I walked in, I was like, oh, it's like a pub.
This whole time?
I just thought it was going to be more like, you know, something from like Auntie Mame. And then we had like a burger or something. I was like, okay.
First on-screen kiss.
I would have to say it must have been Gilmore, probably with Jackson, I would think.
How was it?
Great. He's a real sweetheart. It's always so weird because like you're friends with the person and it becomes like a mechanical thing.
When was the first time you owned your shit professionally?
I think once we started making our own movies. I think also on Mike and Molly, realizing that like I had a position to either make things better for everyone and I had the mouth big enough to do it, or nobody else was in a spot where they could take the risk. And I realized part of my good fortune was also I have to take the fall and take the risk where other people can't stand up. I think you can only do that if you completely are aware that you are responsible for everybody. I'd rather take the extra work and know that we're including everybody and everybody feels valued than just kind of scooting through the day.
Well, that's ownership, isn't it? And that's what you do. It's what you work towards.
I take it as a huge gift when I see something that I don't think is okay and that I can actually go and change it. It's an amazing thing to be able to have. You know, Ben and I always say, we want to show the world we want to be a part of. And then I feel like everybody feels ownership in that. And you're like, that feeling of group accomplishment when you like, you go to work and whatever it is you do, whatever you make, if you're, it's about not being like, I can do it alone. It's me. I'm like, no. I need everyone. I like the feeling of like a group victory.
So you and Ben have been running a cult for a number of years.
Yes, I'd love to talk to you about it.
I got your flyer.
Oh, good.
Okay, I'm just going to wire you the money tonight.
Yeah, if you just can give me your bank routing number, we'll be off to the races.
Okay, 681.
Sure.
Ben. Okay, first drink you order.
Glenlivet with a lot of rocks and water.
Okay. Lastly, what do you think you'll do when you come back to the United States, where you're ostensibly from?
I'm going to just squeeze the bejesus out of my dogs that I miss very much.
Oh, God, yeah.
They're there with my cousin. They could care less. She lets them on the couches now. Like, I've lost all control. I'm going to go see my mom and dad and my sister. And I literally just can't wait to, like, squeeze my friends and see people in person. I want that energy back in the States to feel better again.
No, but I should also say this. Melissa McCarthy.
Yes.
You're the best. Thank you for the person you are, the gifts that you have, how unselfconsciously and warmly and kindly that you share them. And also, you're on our cover that's out. Thanks, mate.
Thank you. I miss you. I can't wait to actually see you in person. Give yourself a squeeze for me. And take care of my country and I'll take care of yours, which sounds more like a threat than I wasn't supposed to. It sounded real threatening. I don't know what got into me.
This has been Ladies First with Laura Brown. We can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks to our production team at Pod People, Rachel King, Matt Savarese, Danielle Roth, Anne Ford, Anne Kane, and Erica Wong. And thanks to Brian Anstey, Molly Stout, and Haley Mason at InStyle. You can find out more at InStyle.com. Find us on Instagram at InStyle Magazine, on Twitter at InStyle, and you can find me on Insta and Twitter at Laura Brown 99.